Welcome to another edition of the Membership World podcast. My name is Gordon Glenister, and I'm the founder of Membership World. This edition is sponsored by our friends at RD Mobile, the complete membership events engagement platform. Now, in this series, I'll be interviewing CEOs from the membership sector. They'll be bringing insights and personal stories of their challenges and successes. But before we get started, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. Now, in today's episode, I'm talking with the CEO of the Scout Movement, Matt Hyde, about the power of volunteering. But before he started out in the Scouts, he was the CEO of the National Union of Students. And here's what he had to say.
I've always really worked for membership organisations in some form. So I was at the National Union of Students for 7 years before the 10 years I've just done at the Scouts. I sort of cut my teeth in the work in the student movement. So student unions are membership bodies as well, representing, you know, the students in their particular university or further education college. And then even a lot of the boards I've been on as well, the National Council for Voluntary Organisations, where I was vice chair, you know, that's a membership body as well. So membership has kind of flowed through my veins, like you could say, throughout my whole life. You know, you get everything that comes with membership bodies, the deep passion and engagement, commitment, sense of associational life, of community and coming together, and all the challenges that come with it as well, whether that be different conflicting interests and different passions. So NUS was interesting because it had individual members, as in the students, so that was about 7 million students, and constituent members, which were the 600 student unions that made up the National Union of Students. And then at Scouts, we've got 434,000 young people. So they are our youth members. But we've also got 143,000 adult volunteers who are our adult members. They are the essential ingredient of how we do what we do. Although we need even more because we've got 100,000 young people on our waiting list who can't join because we need even more volunteers. So.
Really? I guess you've got a good problem to solve, but it's also a frustration as well, I guess.
That's right. I mean, it's an indicator of the demand that there is for scouting. So we've grown 14 out of the last 15 years. Obviously, the 1 year we didn't grow was the pandemic, and we lost 100,000 members, and we've built that back up almost to where we were pre-pandemic. But you're right, it would be like running a shop and having people queuing around the block because they can't get in, even though they want to buy your product. So it's a constant theme for us is how can we recruit more volunteers?
Were you a scout in your younger days?
I was
as well. That was in Leigh-on-Sea in Essex. I remember getting the badges and had a real sense of pride in doing an activity. And when you consider some of the challenges that we have in our society nowadays, having a focal point where you can learn different skills in a safe, friendly, fun environment where you can support each other. I remember I went on scout camp to Christchurch in Dorset as well. That was an experience. But yeah, to bring us up to date with what scouting is all about now, because I'm sure there'll be people that are listening to this that either were scouts in the day but haven't had the chance to revisit it or understand more about it. What happens?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let me just sort of share my scouting journey. So I was a scout in the Fens, in a small Fenland town of Ramsey. It was the first time I ever led anything, first time I ever volunteered, first time I ever fundraised for the very first Comet Relief, which I'm now on the board of. You know, like many people, my own scouting experience was deeply formative. You know, that's the first time I led anything, and I went on to lead things ever since, really. And it all started in that small scout hut when there wasn't a lot to do in a small Fenland town. And that is the transformational impact that it has on people's lives. And, you know, we talk about scouting prepares you with skills for life. And I think that's been true right the way through. Certainly what we do see is particularly for young people who might not be getting on as well at school, where formal education isn't for them. It's scouting that allows you to develop skills, but also gives you confidence. And where you've got role models who look out for you, and where you're in a space where you can, experiential learning is often so much more powerful than being sat in a classroom. So, you know, we talk about learning by doing. That's at the essence of what we do. So we've done that since 1907. But today there are some things that are different from where we started. Lots that's similar. It's still lots of camping. Knots are still being tied, singing around campfires and things like that. But if you look at the program, there are different elements as well. So there's a digital maker badge. There's a digital citizen badge. You can get badges for geocaching. You can get badges for our social action project called A Million Hands, which is working with other national charities on issues chosen by young people that they're passionate about, whether that be climate change and biodiversity, or whether it be supporting people who are displaced, refugees and asylum seekers, or mental health and well-being. These are the issues chosen by the young people themselves. So that's different. We're also boys and girls, so we're all genders.
Oh, that's interesting, because originally it was girl guides and scouts for boys.
And they're still girl guiding. But about 25% of our youth members are girls. And actually, for adult volunteers, it's about 55% male, 45% female. So that's different. So I think the programme has evolved. And obviously, the membership makeup is different as well. And the mechanisms in which we kind of operate, it's mainly still in a scout hut or in an activity centre, a campsite or wherever. But of course, during COVID, we had to shift everything to online. So about 90% of our groups pivoted to running the program over Zoom. And I think that's one of the great strengths of scouting, is that it's a movement. And it's a movement, which means it moves with the times. And that's why I think it's been so enduring and so powerful, and still is. That's not just in the UK. I mean, globally, there are 57 million scouts worldwide in 191 different countries. As you say, in terms of impact and importance of making a difference at a time when the world is very divided, that is an incredibly powerful force for good.
Well, I love it. I mean, well done for what you've achieved in the time that you've been there. And I love the fact that the community is continually growing, and globally as well. I remember whenever I hear the word jamboree, I always think of scouting. So I think it's this sense where everybody's getting closer. We've become more globalized as a unit generally, haven't we? And I think it's fabulous that we're equipping young people with wider skills that perhaps, if left to their own devices, they may not have taken up. But they're being encouraged by their peers, volunteers, and indeed the program itself. So it's really exciting to hear that. Not least of all was the big help out, which I couldn't help but notice was very apparent on the TV. And you, of course, played a big part in that. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I co-founded the big help out with a colleague, Catherine Johnston, who's the chief executive at the Royal Voluntary Service. And it started out as an idea that I was knocking about early last year, because being on the board of Comic Relief and also having this shared passion with Catherine about needing more volunteers, not just at the Scouts, but generally in society, the thinking was, could you put on a night of TV that was like Comic Relief or Children in Need, but instead of the giving of money, we were asking people to give time. And so knocked that about with Richard Curtis, who apparently said they'd had a similar idea in the 1980s and 1990s, but it never really went anywhere. And what Catherine and I were inspired by was that 12.4 million people volunteered in the pandemic, and 4.6 million of those volunteered for the first time. And of those, 3.8 million said that they wanted to continue volunteering. So there was this kind of latent demand to give time, do good, lend a hand in your community. And we've seen this before in things like the Olympics, where you get this big upsurge. But then what tends to happen is people sort of settle back into their own ways. And what actually happened after the pandemic is that whilst informal volunteering went up, so helping neighbours and maybe doing stuff in a faith community or something like that, that went up. Formal volunteering went down, and we saw that in Scouts. We lost about 20,000, although we've now added 3,500 of those back. And it's because people's habits stopped. So those people who'd been probably helping out for week in, week out for some time, suddenly they had a break and decided that they'd done their bit and they wanted to take a step back. So we pitched the idea for the Big Help Out. The reason why it's called the Big Help Out is because you may remember in the pandemic, BBC Children in Need and Comic Relief ran something called the Big Night In. This was going to be the successor to the Big Night In called the Big Help Out. And then the name was developed by one of the producers of Comic Relief and Children in Need. And what's interesting about that is I think if we'd have asked the charity sector to come up with a name, they'd have probably called it Volunteer Now or something like that. The idea was, how do you inspire people to volunteer, but also how do you sell the benefits of volunteering by saying that it's good for you? It's not just good for society. It's not good, just good for causes. It's good for you as an individual. It's good for your skills. It's good for your well-being. It's good for belonging and to be part of something. So we pitched it actually originally for the Platinum Jubilee for the Queen, and it just had so much content it didn't come off, but we knew that the BBC liked it as an idea. So after we were involved with the lying in state of the late Queen, it was there that I spoke to the cabinet secretary and basically pitched this idea. And we went back and forth for about a few months. And then just before Christmas got the green light. So we then launched the Big Help Out at breakneck speed, which was, let's run it as a much broader public engagement campaign. Signpost people to volunteer or to just lend a hand. That could be an hour in your community or helping out, doing a litter pick, checking in on neighbours.
So what you're saying is spell out specifically what the volunteer approach, because the problem is with such a broad campaign, people like the idea of it.
Correct.
Unless they can translate it in their own language as to what that actually means.
Yes.
I guess you could lose people by saying that's a good idea, but I'll think about it. And what you wanted to do was people to take action there and then.
That's exactly it. And so what was happening was you'd get community groups coming together, doing things on the day, councils, faith communities, sports organisations, just saying, just get involved. So in scouting, we did what we call pop-up scouting. So you could come along, get involved in loads of activities as a family, and then actually think about, you might want to come along and help us out on a more regular basis. So it's a much more informal offer. You lower the barrier to participation. And then because of the app that we developed, you just put your postcode in, the causes you were interested in, and all these opportunities came up. So we did that principally, although lots of people did things not just on the bank holiday Monday, but the main day was the bank holiday Monday, the coronation. And over the course of that week, 7.2 million people took part in the Big Help Out.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Which, you know, far, far exceeded our expectations. It was about 6.4 million on the day, 7.2 million over the course of the week. And of those, 80% of people said that they met someone they'd never met before. And I think that's one of the really powerful things about it. It's just giving people an excuse. I mean, one in five people say they don't volunteer because they've never thought about it. And one in five also say that they don't know where to go. So what this was trying to do was to get people to think about it and also signpost those opportunities. And the number of case studies I've seen subsequently, or stories people have told me about people who had never thought about volunteering before and decided, I mean, the Lord Lieutenant of Hertfordshire was telling me that he went into five different charity shops on the day. And he said, while he was there, 12 people walked in off the street and said, I want to volunteer. And he spoke to one of them and said, have you ever volunteered before? And she said, no. And he said, well, why not? She said, I never thought about it until this campaign. So, you know, behind those numbers, that 7.2 million are some incredible positive story of how do you inspire people to just think about doing something different.
I couldn't agree with you more. Well, that was a fantastic case study in itself. And I think you raise a very important point more generally, particularly in the association and membership sector, about many, many organizations have got thousands of members, but not necessarily leveraging them or considering them as volunteers. I mean, I remembered when I was running the BPMA, we had an ambassador program spread across the country. Now, obviously, it's a much, much smaller organization than the Scouts. But the principal idea is recognizing people, giving them a sense of authority and engagement within their own region, and even a budget to enable them to do stuff that was in Scotland. Because I remember one of the issues we used to have is that people in Scotland used to think, oh, but everything is London centric. And, you know, when you're running an organization, whatever size it is, being able to engage through the members is a really important part, because they're the people that have experienced it. And they, I'm guessing also, if they're great advocates for you, that's also a great recruitment opportunity, isn't it? Because it's not just the membership team, then you've got people out in the field saying you should come along. In other words, it might be volunteering that drives people into becoming a member as well.
Absolutely. I think there's something in human nature about the need to belong and the need to be part of something.
Definitely.
And I think associational life, being part of a wider group of people, is so core to our identity. Whether you're a football fan and you're part of that whole experience of a tribe, or you see this a lot with volunteering, you certainly see it with scouting, you know, it becomes really, really strong part of people's identity. Where they're part of something, you're in something together, whether that, you know, I think that shifted over the years, where probably we would have seen similar things. Well, you'd have seen it in much greater numbers in terms of faith communities, particularly the Christian church, or trade unions, or political parties even. You know, you don't have the numbers that you used to see, say, in the 1950s, but people still need to be part of something. They still want to be a member. You got some organizations that are still thriving, like the National Trust is probably a really good example of an organization that, you know, I think was it 5 million plus members they've got. I just think that in a way, the Big Help Out touched into some of that as well. You know, you can be part of something in your community that can do good, but actually the positive feeling that you get from a mental health and well-being point of view, just to be part of something, is very, very powerful. And I think, genuinely think, it should be an important part of public policy discussions. Because, you know, if you're going to try and solve some of the challenges in health and social care or things like that, it's communities and relationships that will be one of the best forms of prevention. It's not just about investment and reform, probably as part of it. What is it that makes us connect within society and makes us feel better about ourselves?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, my partner, for example, is going to see somebody this evening that she started to reach out to because of a program that she's working on within the deaf community. And this individual is quite isolated, and he's already really looked forward to her visit once a week. And, you know, I've been remarking on what you've just been saying, and there's some horrific stats about the effects of isolation of people, aren't there? It's almost like bad for their health. And so sometimes having an individual come and spend an hour with them can be the difference between making them feel good about their life and purpose than almost anything else. And yet, when we talk about volunteering, we don't always think about, well, that could actually mean just going and having a cup of tea with a person that's on their own, isn't it? It's not necessarily about a litter pick.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, in some ways, I think volunteering could be a bit of a misnomer. And I do wonder whether one of the powerful things about the Big Help Out was that, yes, it was about people giving time, but it didn't put the word volunteer front and centre, which for some people could be a turnoff because they think, oh, God, I've got to sign up to something for X number of years for the rest of my life or what have you. And one of the things we are doing at the moment is a huge overhaul of our volunteer experience in Scouts, which is how you attract people, how you get them on board, how you train them and give them the skills that they need and the support they need so that young people are safe and everyone's clear on what their role is. And then also, how do you thank people, motivate them, continue that learning? And then actually also for some people, how you also say thank you and they leave for a bit. I think all of that's really, really healthy. And we brought in a design agency who've worked with us on that. It's all going to be underpinned by a new digital platform to make that process as enjoyable and seamless as possible. But that means that it's about recruiting people on their terms rather than say, we need you to fit into this box. Because people have different time in their life at different times in their life. So when you've got kids or you've got a busy life, that means you've got less time. You might just want to do more episodic volunteering where you can pop in and help out, as you say, just in the way you described that your partner does. And at other times, you might have much more time to give. And so...
Or there might be different projects that just illuminate you or inspire you more than others, rather than necessarily doing something on a regular basis. You know, we all have different passions in our life. You know, I'm passionate about supporting young people in the creative industry because it fits well with, if you said to me, oh, do you want to go and talk to a load of engineering students? I'd be thinking, well, I haven't got as much in common with that audience as I would within the creative space per se. But it's really fascinating what you're saying. What you're doing with this agency could be a really interesting blueprint, not just for Scouts, but I think for many other organizations, because, you know, I work with a lot of trade bodies and institutes, and a lot of them have real challenges recruiting young people for starters. You know, they don't necessarily think about it. And also volunteering almost is not on many of their even agendas. Like, well, we join and only volunteers we have are on the board. And oh my goodness, it's so difficult to try and find somebody to come on the board. Well, that's because I would guess that the strategy isn't right. People don't understand about what's in it for them, how much time that they're going to be asked to commit, and what they're being very specific about their job role. And all the things that you've identified are, I guess, very important for somebody making a decision. And what happens, of course, if the volunteer falls over in some way? In other words, it isn't a good fit. How do you manage somebody out of volunteering in some way? How do you manage that?
Well, we have a quite hierarchical system of volunteer line management. It's one of the things that has not changed much from Baden-Powell, rightly or wrongly, because we're 8,000 separate charities, but those are all part of a hierarchical structure of a county that manages a district, and the district manages the local group. And then within the group, you've got your beaver colony or your now squirrel dray, which is 4 to 5 year olds. The groups are called drays. We launched it 20 months ago now. We've already got 11,000 young people and 1,000 drays. So they're all line managed in a scout troop by the group, and they are responsible for the performance of that group as well. And so people do have to have sometimes difficult conversations, and that's quite hard, because the important thing about volunteering is that it's not work. So it's different from work, and it's still got to be fun. One of the things we're trying to shift towards is teams-based approaches. So it doesn't rely on one person doing everything. You have to divvy up the workload. And for a lot of people, they can't do every week, volunteer every week, because of work or other commitments as well. So you need more volunteers probably than you used to, say, in the 50s or 60s, because people might be only able to do 2 out of 4 nights or 3 out of 4 nights. But within that, we do a lot of work with supporting our volunteer line managers on how to have those conversations. And it might be just that the individual's in the wrong role and there's a better role for them. So it's being able to have that conversation in a way that's open and respectful and in line with our values.
Yeah, amazing. I could talk to you for ages about this really interesting subject, Matt. It's been really great to talk to you, and thank you. I know we've battled to get some time on your very busy diary, so I'm really grateful that you've taken the time to talk.
Absolute pleasure.
And how can people find out more about, if they are interested in volunteering or get involved in the Scout movement, how can they find you?
If you go to scouts.org.uk, that's the website. And if you go on there, it tells you how to sign up as a volunteer or inquire as a volunteer. And also, if you're interested in your children joining as well, or grandchildren or great-grandchildren, then you can find your local group, and that will tell you what's the nearest Scout group to you. There's 7,200 Scout groups across the whole of the country.
This podcast is sponsored by RD Mobile, providing events and member engagement solutions used by organisations worldwide. RD Mobile can help your organisation deliver value at your next virtual or in-person event and throughout the year. Visit us at rdmobile.com to learn more.
That's it for another edition of the Membership World podcast. Please don't forget to follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram or Facebook. And if you want to ask me any questions about any particular issues, do let me know. Once again, a reminder to hit subscribe. And if you feel like, do give us a review, as it does make a big difference. If you want to take part in any of the Membership World programs or podcasts, do just let us know as well. Membership World is also free for membership associations, so do join in the appropriate way on our website. You can also download the amazing reports that we've done, all of which are free of charge. Thanks again to our sponsor RD Mobile and my producer Neil Whiteside from Freedom One. And until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.